The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Nice to have you in on a Saturday. Good morning. My name is Mark Kranak, and I am alongside TJ Henning, who is today filling in for Chris Schmidt. TJ, good morning to you, sire.
Good morning to you, sir.
This will be a very gentlemanly show. I called you sire. You called me sir.
You are a scholar and a gentleman, Mr. Kranak.
Look, you are a total a-hole. No, we're not going to go there. It'll be somewhere in between gentlemanly and not.
All right.
Exciting show today, though. We're going to have Brandon Vogel a little bit later on, Gary Sharp in the 8 o'clock hour, as we normally do. Brad Edwards on the Rewind from ESPN Radio. He joined Chris and Jay earlier this week, so we'll run that in about 15, 20 minutes. This is kind of the scary day for me, TJ. This is the one when you were looking at the schedule going into this year. Of course, you count Wisconsin and Ohio State as probable losses. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, for the most part. Like, whenever you were running through the schedule, those were the two that you're just like, probably not going to happen. All right? This was the other one for me. This Indiana one. This was the... And I think this sort of gets into what we were talking about before we got on the show, TJ. Nebraska's number 10. And number 9, Nebraska's undefeated. Nebraska's coming off a bye week. Nebraska's got Indiana. Has Indiana had more than 6 wins ever, like, in a season? Like, that's almost a serious question. It's been since, like, Antoine Randall L. that they've been able to do that, which was, like, in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel good about this one, man. I just don't.
Well, you and a lot of other people... I mean, I don't know if you've talked, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of people, but a lot of people I've talked to, they're very cautious. They're not like, oh, we're 5-0 and we're dominant. They're very like, we are 10th rated and I'm not quite sure we are the 10th best team. And Indiana's been playing pretty well this season. And I guess going into the season for me, I probably wasn't as worried about Indiana, but now having watched them a little bit, I definitely think this is a game that the Huskers should be cautious about. And as you saw with the line opening at 8 and it fell all the way down to 3.5, I believe.
Yeah. The thing plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
Which is scary also. That's what I'm saying. The whole thing, it just doesn't feel right. Bloomington is a new venue. Nebraska's not been there since they joined the Big Ten.
And what, we're 6 year in?
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though. Like, Indiana's reputation, surprisingly, it's weird that for a team that pretty much never makes a bowl game, their reputation, though, is that of an offensive juggernaut that doesn't play defense.
Yep.
Basically. They're pretty much reversed this year. Their offense is not that good. They're hurt. They're hurt along the offensive line. They're running the ball. So, passing yards,
I'd say maybe a little below average of what they're used to. I wouldn't say not good.
Right. Relatively speaking,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah. There we go.
They're putting up passing yards. Absolutely, they're doing that. Their run game isn't quite there, though. Not where it has been. They rarely get above like a .150, .125, something like 3.9 yards a carry. It's just not that great of a run game where they've had guys coming close to getting 2,000 yards in the past. So they don't really have the run game that they can count on. They're hurt along the offensive line. They have an All-American that's out. Mm-hmm. And the guy's going to be the first guy taken. He could come back today. If he does, that run game might reappear. So that's something to be mindful of if you're Nebraska today. But you're right, man. It is such a cautious optimism. You do not see Husker fans walking with their chest puffed out, feeling like they've arrived or done anything. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at the schedule, and we have only one team we've beaten that has a winning record, and that's Wyoming. Your marquee win, Oregon, they're a mess.
Yeah, they're getting smoked every week now. Now, here's the thing. Nebraska did injure like five of their players. Nebraska contributed to this spiral.
True.
For Oregon.
And I'd still say Oregon's pretty decent on offense, but I mean, Hoke has got his hands full on that defensive side for sure. But yeah, I mean, this Indiana team is probably going to be our best win or best opponent we've played so far. And then if we do win the game, it's our best win at halfway through the season. I don't know, that might not say a lot about our schedule, but obviously we have two meat grinders coming up soon in Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. But it's total cautious optimism. And I think what it is more than that is it's a defense mechanism. Right? No,
yeah.
Nobody wants to, we don't want to let our guard down to be hurt again. Been hurt so many times over the last 15 years, every time you get excited.
Yep.
So now you're just sort of like, they're fine. Yeah. Almost like nobody is going to exhale mm-hmm. until the end of the year. Like even if Nebraska was somehow able to pull off for the rest of the year, like not losing at all. I have a feeling this collective kind of Husker Nation cautious optimism would mm-hmm. continue.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I mean, I think people still are really excited the team's undefeated, but it almost feels like we should be more enthusiastic compared to where we were last year, where we were at 2-3 at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting vibe. You can hit us up on Twitter at Mark Skurs or at TJ, is it underscore Henning?
You got it.
Nailed it. Or you can give us a call this morning, 466.
There you go.
3776. Let's try that again. 402-466-3776 to get in on the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Another thing I want to get into, TJ. All right. Let's not talk about the established guys. I don't want to talk about Westerkamp. I don't want to talk about Seaton Carter. I don't want to talk about who, by the way, both of them are injured. even Newby or Ozigbo, because we've seen enough of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point now, we're five games in. Been able to see enough of some of the younger guys that are getting a sniff. But they don't even have to be younger. They can be older, too. Just guys that typically haven't played a lot, but have played a little. And from what you've seen, you just flat out know they're a baller. Like, maybe they're buried on the depth chart right now. Maybe they have a little conditioning to do or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that's holding them back from playing more. But the little you've seen, you know it.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, that's a baller. That dude can play. Can't wait till they play more. And I got a couple for you. I'm just wanting to do any jump to mind for you right now out of maybe some of the lesser heralded guys that you've seen just enough of to know that Nebraska's got a player on their hands.
Yeah, so I've got three on my list here, and we'll see if we have any similar ones. One for me would be Kyron Williams. I think, you know, having not earned that black shirt to begin the season and then earning it, he's definitely deserved it. He's impressed me a lot. I may be cheating a little bit with this one because he has been playing a lot, but this is only his second year at the position, and that's freedom at the defensive end position. I just think
You're convinced, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You think he's a player?
I think he is. I mean, okay. He needs a little more time just because he hasn't played a whole lot, but I think giving more time with Perella, who's a legit D-line coach, and the athleticism that Freedom has, I think his junior and senior years, he's going to be a monster. And then my final guy for me is Trey Bryant. The little flashes I've seen out of that guy, to me, I think he's going to be the number one running back going into next season.
No, I like those picks. I like all of them. I agree with you on Kyron. I think when you're at field level or close to it and you watch Kyron, you're even more of a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like that dude is into it. He's really, really locked in.
Yes.
But very motivated. Every play to him is a war. You know, they're all their own individual wars. He's a good communicator. He was put in a weird spot in that Fresno State game where Nate Gary was out. And it's pretty much the most extended playing time Kyron's ever seen. And mm-hmm. he's directing the defense. You know, and he really hadn't had to do that before.
Yeah.
Did a good job of it. So totally agree with you on Kyron. I don't know about Freedom, man. I'm not saying he's not going to be a productive player. And here's the difference. What I'm looking for here, what I'm talking about. I'm not just talking about somebody that is going to be a productive contributor. talking about somebody that can ball. That's all conference level. That all conference ability. So you're saying you see that out of Freedom. You see all conference ability out of him.
I think I could his senior year. I really do.
Okay. That's cool. I don't see that out of him. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
We don't
Whatever.
Have to agree on everything.
No, we don't. Your opinion is totally wrong there. kidding. So I got Wilbon in there too.
Oh, okay.
I know what you're saying about Bryant. I like him too. I think Nebraska's in pretty good shape with those two. Mm-hmm. And with Azigbo, obviously. Go for the future.
Mm-hmm.
But Wilbon's just got something. Corey Ross had it. Brandon Jackson had it. D'Angelo Evans had it. They just got this sort of wiggle. They're just and the vision attached with their hips. It's hard to explain, but it's just something that like they see the game differently.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you on Wilbon because the flashes he's shown in limited reps speaks a lot, but to your point where he's showing those, how come he hasn't been getting more carries and more snaps if he has that ability? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. Newbie must be one of the most impressive practice players on the planet. He has to be. It has to be, right? And by the way, kudos to Newbie because he has showed up this year.
Yeah.
He's gotten limited carries. I wouldn't say critical of him, but you know, I think like most fans just haven't been overly impressed with him, you know. But to me, he's playing at his peak right now, which is what you hope for. It took him a long time to develop. But so you got him in front. You got Azigbo, who is just sort of like that. Divine Azigbo is that he's a perfect like second to third quarterback to just like start chipping away at a team.
Mm-hmm.
Just pound him over and over. He is so perfect for that role. And so that's what he does. If you notice, that's kind of what Nebraska does. It's like Newbie in the first quarter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's some exceptions to this. It might, you know, late first quarter. Whatever.
Yeah.
But the first couple series are Newbie. Then Azigbo takes like five. And then Newbie comes back in and kind of finishes them off after they're dented. So you got those two guys in front of Wilbon, who I think had a maturity issue, to be honest. I think that was one of his biggest downfalls, why he didn't play a lot before. But he's a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a sophomore. He's got plenty of time. But he has that ability that you just don't... The kind of ability you don't teach and the kind of ability where he makes a move and it's always surprising, like where he ends up. You know, you're watching him, you're like, oh, he got over there. And people literally, when you're watching him, they say, ooh. They literally go, ooh. Like, that's a natural human reaction to watching that guy move. So I got him. Agreed with you on Chiron as guys that I think think are some pretty serious ballers that really haven't played a lot. Those are my main two. And I'll also throw in, you haven't seen a lot of him, but Antonio Reed.
Hmm.
That dude, he's mad at somebody, at something. And he hits differently.
Hmm.
That guy hits differently than other. I hope he doesn't end up being Ricky Thenars.
Ricky.
Somebody like that, right? somebody that could just unload on somebody, but.
Or Damian Stafford, yeah.
Yeah, right. But didn't actually perform all that well. I hope that's not him.
What about the guy neither of us mentioned, the most heralded recruit we got, Lamar Jackson? I was kind of impressed what I saw from him, Fresno State, freshman. They were throwing at him a lot and, you know, obviously made some mistakes, but I thought he handled it pretty well.
I'll tell you what. So the eyeball test, he's, right? He's like the perfect specimen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't seen enough to really have an opinion either way. I don't think he played bad in that game.
No.
But I didn't see any jaw-dropping moments either. It was just sort of... I think he just kind of held serve.
Yeah, I just thought it was pretty steady for first guy ever making his first college appearance in front of 90,000 people, you know, with all the Sam Fultz stuff going on that game. And I thought he was pretty level-headed that game.
No, he was. And that is something. And he was playing against some men, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's some... Fresno State had some guys now. on the edge. They're not a very good team, but they had some dudes on the edge that were not small. And for him to go in there and compete like that, yeah, absolutely. Nebraska's got something there. And you know what? The guy we haven't mentioned, and this almost isn't fair, but Chris Jones, too. All of a sudden, and we've been talking about this on this show ever since the Illinois game last year. The Illinois loss last year is when Chris Jones figured out for himself that he could play at this level, at a high level. If you remember at the end of that game last year against Illinois, they're going to Geronimo Allison. They're kind of all everything receiver. Mm-hmm. They're throwing fade routes to him. I think they probably threw, what, four in a row?
It seems somewhere like around there. At least, yeah.
And then there was a pass interference, yep. And they were going straight at Chris Jones.
Yes.
And eventually it worked. But it took them like four attempts.
Yeah.
You know, the first attempt, I'm probably not remembering this right, but it's something like first attempt didn't work out. Jones covered him. Second attempt, probably pass interference or something. Third attempt didn't work out. Great coverage. Fourth attempt, they finally got him.
Yeah.
And this was like, yeah. This was like Jones' like first extended action ever on the field, and completely looked like he belonged. Completely looked. And I'm like, ever since then, I'm like, all right, Nebraska's got something there. And that guy is not, he has the confidence that you need at that position. Cause he was going toe to toe with that dude. That dude was all American material. And Chris Jones had hardly ever played, and Nebraska's secondary was terrible. And he ended up losing the battle, but the way he battled, you knew Nebraska had something.
Yeah.
And now they're talking about this guy being an early entrance into the draft, potentially. What? Like, what the hell's that?
Yeah, that, he's played well this season, for sure.
I'm not ready for that, though. It's like, dude, no. I just got here. Like, I was not prepared for this yet. They're talking about Chris Jones has a chance to potentially leave early for the draft. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, that's dedication to the work he's put in. It's good for him.
Wow. Yeah, but it's not emotionally prepared for that. We're just getting to know him. Nebraska hasn't had a shutdown corner like that in so long, it feels like.
Yeah.
Stanley Jean, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
Anyhow. All right, TJ. We got Brad Edwards.
Yep.
On the rewind. He was with Jay, too, right?
Yep.
All right, so what you'll hear next, send it to break, come back. You'll hear Jay Moore and Chris Schmidt talking with Brad Edwards, who does the College Game Day stuff for ESPN Radio. So that's coming up next. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
We welcome in ESPN Insider College Game Day, college football analyst with ESPN, Brad Edwards, at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, how are we doing?
Oh, doing great. I'm at soccer practice again today, so if you hear some kids screaming in the background, don't be alarmed.
That is all right. When Brad is at soccer practice and they're screaming, it's the other coach, correct?
Exactly.
There you go. That's good. Hey, so what do you think of this weekend? Not as many top 10 tilts, but you have some matchups. And I wanted to get your thoughts first on a team that is nosediving, that's no longer even ranked. That's Oregon. Let's spend 2 seconds on Oregon. Are they this bad, or are they just that shattered?
I think it's both. I think defensively they're that bad. Obviously, the new quarterback was not as good as what they've had in previous years, and that played into it somewhat. When your defense is that bad, you need to have a great offense to stay competitive, and they just don't have a great offense. I think they're still good on that side of the ball, but now they seem to have lost their will to fight. I mean, look, there was a comment today out of Oregon, one of their players said that he thinks that like 30 to 40% of the guys on the team don't care whether they win or lose. Now, did that just happen this week? Did it happen 2 weeks ago? I don't know. But that's a bad deal. When any player, even anonymously, forget actually saying it on the record, but when any player would say that while the season is still going on, you got problems.
Oregon has a lot of problems. Washington looks incredible. Brad, let's talk a little bit about Ohio State and Indiana. Nebraska has Indiana, so we'll get to that. But and I know you guys were doing game day, so you saw highlights and you followed that game a little bit, the 2:30 game. What's your takeaway with Ohio State's performance last weekend? Was it maybe a peek ahead to Wisconsin? Was it a good matchup for Indiana where they just had a couple of things go wrong? Otherwise, it could have been a lot closer. That's the first time Ohio State actually looked human.
Yeah.
So is that more about Indiana or is that more about Ohio State?
Well, you're right. I think it's kind of a combination, which is that Ohio State was due to have a subpar game at some point. I don't know that they were necessarily as jacked up for that game as they might have been for some others. Now, I don't think there's any way they overlooked Indiana. I remember they almost lost there last year, so I know they were respecting them. And it wasn't like Indiana really threatened. I mean, there wasn't any point where you felt like Ohio State could be in trouble here. I think Indiana did a good job of hanging around, and that's basically what it is. And with Ohio State, most teams in the country would be doing well just to hang around with them. And so there's a lot to be said for that. Urban Meyer, I don't think was too far off base when he said last week that Indiana was the best defense they faced this year. Now, we'll say that's not saying a lot. I mean, if you've watched Oklahoma, you know that's not saying a whole lot, that Indiana's defense is better than theirs. But they are an improved team, and they're very respectable. And certainly it's a dangerous game coming up for Nebraska this week, especially having to play them on the road.
Let's follow that up. And when you look at this matchup with Nebraska and Indiana, danger's kind of been the buzzword this week, and Nebraska's got two guys out for sure with Seathan Carter, really good tight end, and Jordan Westerkamp out. Divine Ozigbo likely will not play. Tommy Armstrong's nursing a bad ankle. The quarterback run game was so big for Ohio State last week, it needs to be big for Nebraska. How are you? What's your gut say? If you look at this as we talk now, do you think Nebraska is on upset alert and that follows through, or do you think Nebraska somehow finds a way to survive?
Oh, I think you're absolutely on upset alert. I don't know what Vegas says about this game. Three and a half? Yeah, I would think that this is pretty much a toss-up game, just looking at it from my perspective. And look, Nebraska, I'm sure everybody there is excited about the rankings this week and where the polls have them. If we're being real here, Nebraska's not a top 10 team. I don't consider that to be a slam of Nebraska. I don't think coming into this season anyone had any delusions that they were really a top 10 team. They just happen to have kept a zero in the loss column a lot later than most teams have, and they've kind of moved up there by default. But considering what Nebraska probably wanted to accomplish out of this season and what they were hoping in a best-case scenario this season could be, this is a pivotal game. I think if you can beat Indiana, even if you were to lose the remaining three road games, I think you can live with a worst-case scenario of losing at Wisconsin, at Ohio State, and at Iowa. You'd love to win one of those games, but if that's all you had and you were 9-3, had a chance in a bowl game to hit 10 wins, I'd say, I mean, at least to me, that's a great step forward for Nebraska considering what happened last year. So I just think in terms of Nebraska taking that next step that they want to take as a program, this is a big game that they need to win. Not that everything falls apart if they don't, by any stretch, but I think in order to have a season that you can really feel good about, this would be a game that they would absolutely need to win.
All right, Brad, I always kind of hate the early Heisman talk, so I'm going to kind of word a question in kind of ways that were, essentially you're giving me your top pick right now, but I'm going to say if you had a fantasy draft or a draft, who would you be drafting right now as your number one pick in college football?
I'd go with the same guy I'd have at the top of my Heisman list right now. Actually, I think my top two would be the same. I would have Lamar Jackson first, and I would have Jabril Peppers second. And I think with Jackson, he's just at a different level right now, and he's still raw. I mean, as a passer, he has a long way to go, at least in terms of what his ceiling you would think is. But as a runner, I mean, he's as dangerous as as any quarterback that I've seen in college football, and that includes Michael Vick, who I would probably, you know, put at the top of the list in terms of, you know, a just electrifying runner as a quarterback. So yeah, Lamar Jackson is who I would go with first, and then mainly because it's quarterback. That's where you have to start if you're building a team. But Peppers is a guy who can do so much and have an impact in so many different ways. That I don't think he's too far behind, and ultimately I think, you know, what'll keep him from winning the Heisman is that he's not a quarterback, and for a guy like him to have a chance to win, it needs to be a year where there's not a quarterback having a great season. And if Lamar Jackson doesn't get hurt, with six of their last seven games being against teams that would by most people be classified as cupcakes, he should be setting some national records by the time this season's over.
Brett Edwards, college football insider and analyst, College Game Day with ESPN, joining us here, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, some pretty interesting matchups this weekend. Let's start with Tennessee hosting Bama. The gauntlet continues to be thick for Tennessee. Another heartbreaker. They were on the wrong side of it. Were the Vols? What a ball game against A&M. Bama just doesn't care, man. They just show up and take your lunch money. Does that happen again this weekend at Rocky Top?
I think there's a chance that it could, because Tennessee is really beat up. Now, yeah. I do think they're going to get one of their linebackers back, and that's a positive step. They're probably going to get one of their running backs back, but the other running back, Kamara, had as big of a game as a running back could have last week. So I don't think they necessarily need Jalen Hurd back. By the way, how would you like to be Vern Lundquist calling this game, and you have Jalen Hurd at running back for Tennessee and Jalen Hurts at quarterback for Alabama?
I love Vern.
I think he's going to screw that. He's going to screw that up over under 7-8 times. I don't know what, but
I'm going under.
Yeah, we love Vern anyway. I think Alabama. What's a little scary is that they played their best offensive game of the season last weekend at Arkansas, and there's no question Tennessee's better than Arkansas. But at some point, you figured things were going to start to click for Alabama on that side of the ball with a freshman quarterback and with a ton of inexperience at running back, and they were finally starting to open up some lanes in the running game. And quarterback, I believe, only threw three incompletions last week. So I think they're starting to get dangerous on that side of the ball, and when you combine that with a defense that seems to be scoring at least one touchdown every game, that's a pretty tough team to beat. And so I think for Tennessee, first step is just hanging in there and not falling down by double digits in the first half, which they've managed to do in almost every game this season, because this is a team that I don't think is going to give up a double-digit lead.
Bama just kind of squeezes the life out of you. They'll pound you, and their defense is fierce. How about Ole Miss and Arkansas? A lot of points put up by Arkansas, but obviously not enough to the half hundred that Tennessee, or I should say Alabama, put up. That's a tough game. Not only did you just play Alabama, but you're beat up. You're beat up a lot of times the following game, and Ole Miss comes in, and I know they have two losses, but man, they look like a dynamite team. They look like they're getting better.
Yeah, they are a really good team, and I think what we've seen from Arkansas this year against TCU, against A&M, against Alabama, is that they're not a great defensive team. And not that anyone was expecting them to be top 10 in the country or anything like that, but this is a team that could get torched by Ole Miss's offense. And so Arkansas is going to have to score a lot of points to keep up. And Ole Miss they have given up some points, I mean, to some good offensive teams, Florida State and Alabama. And so, you know, on the road, I'm not going to say that this is a game that Ole Miss couldn't lose. But it's going to have to be pretty high scoring for Arkansas to have a chance, because I think Ole Miss will score plenty.
Let's hit on Ohio State at Wisconsin. Upset alert for the Buckeyes?
Possibly. You know, Wisconsin, I think we all know, is a good defensive team. I question how many points they can score here. I'm thinking somewhere around 17 is probably their ceiling. You know, Ohio State, despite losing all those guys in the NFL, is still really good defensively. And so I think that's really the key for Wisconsin, is where you're going to come up with points. More than likely, they would need some big plays on defense or special teams. And this may sound really strange, but I think their best chance might be JT Barrett. he, Oklahoma game aside, has not played all that well so far this year. For most of their games, I think he's looked a little bit like the JT Barrett of last year when he didn't quite find his groove and he was sharing time with Cardale Jones and all that. He does not look like the same JT Barrett from his freshman season when he was one of the best players in the nation. And he has been a little turnover prone. And if you can make Ohio State throw the ball, make Barrett throw the ball, he could make some mistakes because he's not at the top of his game right now. And I think as unlikely as that might seem, that's probably the best chance Wisconsin has of coming out with a win here.
Brad, about 90 seconds here from a playoff standpoint. Brad's power 4+1. What are you thinking right now as far as if the playoffs started tomorrow?
All right. So my top five right now, I have Ohio State at 1 this week. I have Clemson at 2, Alabama at 3, Louisville at 4, and Michigan at 5. And really, you could probably take those five teams and throw them in a hat and mix them up and, you know, put them in any order, and nobody could really argue too much with it. Look, right now, if the season ended today, it would be a fascinating playoff because every one of those teams, I think, has a weakness that you could identify, or at least something that they're not really good at. And so, on top of that, they're all good defensive teams, and I think if it ends up being four of those five, and let's throw Washington in the mix too because I think they're really good. If it holds serve or holds form the way it is right now, it's going to be a fantastic college football playoff.
Our old pal Mike Leach said he'd go Blackbeard, Winston Churchill, and Geronimo for his road trip. Would you go on that road trip?
All right. You know what? I don't have much time to explain them all.
Yeah.
So let me start with, I saw the video where a bunch of coaches said Jesus. I'm gonna skip that one because I'm just going to say that if I spent that much time with Jesus, I wouldn't want to stay on the earth. I would want to be out of here. So I'm going to go with the Apostle John.
Okay.
Because not only could he tell you about everything that happened in and around Jesus, but he also was shown the revelation.
Right.
And so I'm going with him. There are other historical figures I could go with, but just for the sake of not being boring, let me skip and I'll give you one fictional character. Clark W. Griswold.
Okay.
If I'm going to go on a road trip, there's the guy I'm going to go with. And if I want to go college football for a third one, give me Barry Switzer. If
nice.
I can listen to Barry Switzer
right.
tell me stories just for a few hours, I mean, it would just be endless entertainment.
That's an awesome call. I went Danny Knee because Danny was hilarious, but I went with Switzer. And changed my pick. Brad Edwards, college football insider, ESPN Game Day. You watch him and hear him and see him. Follow him on Twitter at @JBradEdwards. Brad will catch up next week. Thanks for a few minutes. That was fun.
All right. See you guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Brad.
Brad Edwards.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out. Excellent strategy, sir.
Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday. Good morning, Mark Kranak alongside TJ Henning, who is filling in for Chris Schmidt as we get ready for Indiana and Nebraska later on today. 2:30 in Bloomington, Nebraska's first ever trip to visit the Hoosiers. All right, TJ, let's look at the top 25 this week because it's a pretty interesting week for potential movement for Nebraska within the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange, but you have the middle of the pack in the top 10 from number 4 to number 7. All of them have a bye. Michigan will not play today. Washington at number 5 does not play. A&M at number 6 does not play. Louisville already played. They played on last night. Beat Duke 24-14. So there's four teams there. Let's see how far Nebraska could potentially move up. Because remember last week it was what? They were 13th, 15th, and they jumped up to number 10 without even playing?
Yeah, I think they were maybe 12. If I'm
12, that's where
right.
It was. Jumped two spots. From the looks of it today, Okay, so you got Alabama and Tennessee. Alabama could send Tennessee past Nebraska. Tennessee's number 9.
Mm-hmm.
So very reasonable to expect if Alabama dominates, which they probably will, Tennessee tumbles, vaults Nebraska up a spot. Ohio State and Wisconsin. I don't see Wisconsin falling far unless they get drilled. If Ohio State drills them, then you have Wisconsin at number 8 that could tumble past Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and bump Nebraska up to number 8. Will be interesting to see what pollsters do with Louisville. And they knocked off Duke 24-14.
But they aren't going to get any style points from it.
No. That's what I'm saying. Duke's like 3-3 now. They got the Notre Dame win. It's a respectable outfit, but it was very pedestrian on Louisville's part. So there's a chance, and then you have, you know, A&M's not playing, Washington's not playing, Michigan's not playing, Clemson's not going to lose to North Carolina State.
No.
So it appears the best case scenario for Nebraska is you have Tennessee getting drilled, Wisconsin getting drilled, and then pollsters not rewarding Louisville. There's a chance Nebraska could get up to number 7 with a win today against Indiana.
Yeah, that's a little crazy to think halfway through the season from where we were last year.
did you just hear that?
Number 7.
Nebraska could be ranked number 7 in the country. Like, that is a reasonable... That's not just if everything shakes out right. No, that's extremely reasonable that could happen.
And then in 2 weeks, I believe, then did the first rankings of the College Football Committee come out? I think following the Purdue game, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So you take care of business there, be 7-0, possibly 7th in the country. It'll be interesting to see what they do with who's Nebraska has played so far in the season, but. I mean, Husker fans would take that in a heartbeat. 7-0, 7th in the country.
That's just absurd. I don't believe this team is that. I don't think they're the 7th best team in the country. But until they prove you otherwise,
yeah.
I mean, why not?
I mean, you play who's on your schedule.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Nebraska with a decent showing today. I think what the most likely thing is, if Nebraska has a decent showing and gets a W, I think Nebraska ends up number 8. I think that's where number 7, there some things would have to happen. I think Wisconsin will actually play well against Ohio State, and the pollsters will not drop them too far.
Yeah. I mean, did you watch that Louisville Clemson game? Like, I still came away so impressed by Louisville even in that loss. Like,
exactly.
Like, to me, they could still be in the college football playoff if they went out.
Well, similar to A&M and Tennessee, right? Like, Not a bad showing.
No.
By Tennessee. You can't punish them too bad for going into Kyle Field and competing like that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so most likely Nebraska ends up at 8 or 9 if they get a win. But it's possible they could get to 7, which is just crazy to even think about. 466-3776, 466-3776, if you want to get in, talk Indiana and Nebraska. And in the next hour, we'll have Brandon Vogel, managing editor for Hail Varsity. He is down in Bloomington. And we'll also have Gary Sharp joining us near the bottom of the hour, next hour. So let's take a look at some numbers. Now, coming into this year for Tommy Armstrong, what was reasonable, right? Like, what did you think? He's essentially been, what, a 54% passer?
Mm-hmm.
That's fair to say?
Yep.
He's basically a 54% passer, and he's been good for double-digit turnovers.
Yep.
Around there. You look at where he's at now, and...
it's amazing.
We talked about that going into this year, too. If you were going to have a run-heavy offense, and you want that run-heavy offense to also feature the quarterback run, who else do you want taking... Tommy would be one of the top 3 or 4 guys in the country that you want running that offense. The question was, are you going to actually do it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to actually commit to the run, and are you going to actually feature the quarterback run? If you are going to, Tommy absolutely is a top 3 or 4 guy in the country. But who you got in front of him? Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, the guy from Tennessee. Dobbs.
Yeah, and I'm not even completely sold on Dobbs that much, but yeah.
Right. Yeah, but you know, I think most people would pick. Tommy's moving his he's moving his way up. Lamar Jackson's on a different planet.
Yeah, and you still and might take JT Barrett over him too.
JT Barrett, pretty legit too. Yeah, but regardless, mm-hmm. Tommy's a top. He's a top fiver for sure. Look at what he's done so far. He's at 59% throwing. This is 129 attempts. 129 attempts, he only has two picks. So he's throwing a pick once every 65 throws.
And that's what's crazy, because going into the season, I thought if he could just average like just under like 0.9 interceptions per game, 0.8, I think people would take that in a heartbeat, because that would maybe be about just 10, 11 interceptions for the season. But right now, he's only thrown 2 in 5 games. I mean, knock on wood, that's quite the turnaround from where it's been.
Who do you think has the most rushing touchdowns on the team? Tommy.
Okay.
He's third in rushing right now. He's just behind Newby and Azigbo. Just under 300 yards, 4.9 yards a carry. He's averaging 60 yards a game on the ground, basically, and has 5 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, you got to give some credit to Danny Langsdorf, to Mike Riley, for completely shifting.
Oh yeah,
in the right way. You remember how this went with Callahan, right? You remember how this went when it was system first, damn be the players. System first. That's what mattered. These guys, I think, did that a little bit last year to start, but quickly started to pivot, and by the end of the year had totally pivoted and have based it off of the skill set. And this year, dude, I have not seen those guys revert back to what's comfortable, which is chucking it down the field 40 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see them doing it. I think they are being smart coaches for what they have on the staff or for what they have on the roster. And that is good to see, because we have seen it go the other way, where it's like, I don't care if we got Joe Daly, we're throwing it 45 times. We're doing West Coast. It's great in every area. You know, it's finally not happening. All right, that's hour one. Up next, Brandon Vogel will join us from Bloomington, and we'll take your calls 466-3776. Back after this on Hail Varsity Radio. Hail Varsity Radio.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down, and that foot is me.
Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday. Good morning to you. Mark Kranak alongside TJ Henning, who is filling in for Chris Schmidt. Last hour, we heard from Brad Edwards from ESPN Radio and talking Nebraska and Indiana, the Huskers' first trip to Bloomington since joining the Big Ten. And with us, as he's with us most Saturdays, that would be Brandon Vogel, managing editor for Hail Varsity Magazine and HailVarsity.com. Mr. Brandon Vogel, how are you this morning, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Dude, talk to me about Bloomington. It's weird. Indiana is like even though it's considered part of the Midwest by some circles, it's sort of a foreign land in some ways. Like, I just don't know many people that just go to Indiana. Your impressions of Bloomington, just as a city, as a campus, facilities that you've seen so far, it's very much an unknown quantity.
I wholeheartedly agree. Indiana is a state that I drive through often, and it's kind of strange. Like, I think Bloomington is the fourth or fifth largest city, and it's kind of like if you took a Big Ten university and dropped it in Grand Island. Now, Bloomington's a little bit bigger than that. I think it's 80,000 people, and then you've got 30 or 40,000 students. But it's kind of got this classic town square with the courthouse right in the middle of the city. And then all around there, there's, you know, the sort of college restaurants and tattoo shops and all of the things that you would expect to have from a big college town. But it definitely feels pretty small. It's a little bit isolated. You know, Indianapolis isn't too far away. Bloomington's south of that. So they're not very far from Kentucky, I guess. So you get a little bit of the bleed of that sort of southern Midwestern culture there. It's pretty interesting.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Brandon, but is Bloomington the only football stadium Nebraska has yet to play in the Big Ten, correct?
In Maryland.
In Maryland, so, okay. But they've been the recent addition. Is that just the way it's going to be with having 14 teams in and only having 9 conference games, is you might not get to these places 5-6 years down the road?
Yeah, it looks that way, just with the way the rotation works. And you start looking at Nebraska's going ahead, you know. I don't know why I had forgotten this, but Nebraska's going back to Penn State next year. So I wasn't expecting to make that trip for a while again, because Nebraska's been out there a bunch. But so, yeah, there's not a lot of rhyme or reason to it. Yeah, when Nebraska joined the Big Ten, you kind of saw that Indiana wasn't on the schedule for a while there. So I was pretty excited to get here. It's always fun to see a new place. And so far, Bloomington seems like a pretty great town.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Nebraska's formula is going to change a little bit today, and there's a lot going on here with this Indiana game. I think coming into the year, this was the one besides the obvious that I was most concerned about. Of course, you're concerned about Wisconsin and Ohio State, but this is just the one where you're just sort of like, Indiana tends to play people pretty well. They're always close to pulling off the upset. This year they actually did against Michigan State, so they're sort of scary from that regard. But Nebraska offensively today, the formula is definitely changing. You don't know what you're going to get out of Ezigbo today. Don't know if he's going to be able to play. He's been such a big part. Westerkamp, you know, Tommy's security blankets out. But you may be plus. This is what's weird about it. With Westerkamp being out, but putting Riley in the slot, is it reasonable to expect Nebraska might actually get a production upgrade? It's counterintuitive, but might actually get a production upgrade, because you are going to have a huge slot receiver today that is going to be tough to deal with for Indiana.
Big and one of the fastest players on the team as well. He does present some matchup problems in there. You know, I think Nebraska will come out and try to make this game look as much like the games that have come before it, and that they'll try to run the ball, as you mentioned, with Devine. It'll be interesting to see how close to 100% he is, because Nebraska obviously leans on him a lot over the course of a game. So they'll come out and do that. If Indiana is able to sort of devote a ton of people to the run and stop the run pretty well, the question then becomes, okay, well, what's Nebraska do now? I think one option is they look to Tommy to sort of get the run game going a little bit. But with him, you also have to sort of wonder how close is he to 100%. He's probably closer than Ezigbo. And then you look at the pass game. You don't have Season Carter, but I think Indiana plays really aggressive pass defense. So you'll look for some of those things we've seen a little bit from Danny Langsdorf a little bit more often in terms of some of the screen game. I think you'll see quite a bit of maybe something, you know, a couple shots downfield with a double move like we saw against Northwestern. Those things all could work against this Hoosier defense.
So the Nebraska defense, how good of tests are they going to get from this Indiana offense? Is this Indiana offense still, relatively speaking, to pass Indiana offenses, still pretty good?
It is. It doesn't run the ball quite as well. In fact, I think they're averaging, you know, 3.8 or something like that yards per carry, which is the lowest Kevin Wilson era, you know. Minus maybe these last 2 years when Indiana's had some really good running backs. Everyone kind of forgets about the Hoosiers' run game. It's pretty good. Until this year. So I think Nebraska has to be able to lock that up. If Indiana's ripping off runs, if they're doing what Illinois did 2 weeks ago, essentially, I think Nebraska, that's how they get in trouble the most. The passing game for the Hoosiers is going to be there. They've got a big quarterback who's pretty accurate. Also wears number 21, which is fantastic. They're going to complete some passes. But if Nebraska can stop the run, keep them under that 4 yards per carry mark, I think the defense will be playing pretty well.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Flipping back to offense a little bit, the thing that's most concerning about whether or not Ezigbo is going to kind of give you what he has given you is he's been that guy that pretty much dents the armor, right? Like he doesn't break off the long runs because he doesn't have that breakaway speed necessarily. But Nebraska's sort of had that classic, like the reason why you run the ball, they've had that classic formula where, you know, early in the game, it's you're not getting as many yards, but then towards the end of the first half, start getting more and more, and then by the time the fourth quarter is on, it's the dam is broken loose, and Ezigbo's a big part of that. So if Nebraska doesn't have that, do you think Newby or Trey Bryant or who out of Nebraska's backs is capable of having that same cumulative effect on a defense?
It's a good question. It would probably have to be a cumulative effort for the most part. I mean, if you just look at the guys and their body types, you'd probably say Trey Bryant might have a little bit of those, you know, sort of that straight ahead bruiser type of traits, not to the degree that Devine does, but a little bit. But you know, I think they would probably try it with Newby with the way he played in the fourth quarter against Illinois. He was making some tough runs. You know, who knows if those would have the same effect, those the same 10 runs from Devine. But with the way he played, I mean, I think he's going to get as many opportunities as he can handle today.
So looking at ESPN.com right now, their football power index, they're giving Nebraska a 78% chance of winning today's game against Indiana. That seems a lot higher than what I feel like people around the state are feeling. I feel like they're more around 55% maybe. Why do you think so many other Nebraska people are so cautious about this game?
Part of it might just be a little bit of unfamiliarity with Indiana, honestly. You know, we tend to think of them as high-flying offense. You're going to have to score 45 points to beat them. I don't know if that's necessarily true in this particular season. So there's a little bit of that. I think there's a little rankings reaction to that. You know, we've seen that there's a lot of people out there, and not just people outside of Nebraska. A lot of Nebraska fans think that Nebraska has not earned a top 10 ranking at this point. And it's kind of tough to make the argument based on who they've beaten that they are the 10th best team in the country. So I think you throw that into the pot and you stir all this up and you see the way Indiana played Ohio State pretty tough last week. And you've got some of that, but I kind of come into this thinking Nebraska is about 10, 11 points better than Indiana. That probably doesn't equate to 78%. That probably equates to something closer to like 68%.
Brandon Bogle, managing editor for Hail Varsity, is with us. He is in Bloomington as Nebraska gets ready to take on Indiana at 2:30 today. You mentioned something in the hot reads that I found interesting. You called Seathan Carter probably Nebraska's best player. All right, back that up a little bit. Why do you believe he's Nebraska's best player?
I think he's probably the best athlete. He presents a huge matchup problem as a pass catcher and even running the ball with that speed and athleticism. And he's an absolutely violent blocker. Like, I think when opposing teams look at Nebraska's offensive film, they're probably like, you know, and it's close with Tommy. I mean, I think Tommy has the most impact on Nebraska's team this season. But when coaches look at who do we have to deal with, I think they're probably pointing to Seathan Carter and Tommy Armstrong as 1 and 1A in whatever order you want to put them in.
Vogues, when you're saying best player, then do you also mean that maybe he's going to be the highest draft pick for the Huskers?
Well, I definitely think he will be the highest draft pick.
Okay.
I don't think there's much question with that. You just look at sort of what tight ends mean in the NFL. And what Seathan Carter is capable of. And I definitely do think when you start looking at draft prospects, he's the best one Nebraska has.
Brandon Bogle with us, managing editor for Hail Varsity. All right, so you don't have Jordan Westerkamp today. You don't have Seathan Carter. You don't know what you're going to get from a Ezigbo. Other people are obviously going to have to fill this void. You got Alonzo Moore coming back from injury. What about Demorde Pearsonell? Listen to his stats so far this year. -4 yards rushing. His long is 5, even though he's the guy that's supposedly built best for that fly sweep. And then receiving, he has 6 catches for 60 yards. So the guy has literally, from the line of scrimmage, has contributed 57 yards to Nebraska this entire season. Is this maybe the day? Are we hoping a little bit too much for DPE, Or do you think he's got something in him to give Nebraska a spark on offense?
I think he definitely has it in him. I mean, you add in, he's only got 4 punt returns, I think, for 56 yards. And 2 of them were pretty big. But that's definitely been his biggest contribution so far. I mean, if you're looking for the guy that we haven't mentioned yet as someone who could spark Nebraska's offense, I think it's probably Stanley Morgan Jr. He's made a ton of tough catches. I could see him having a really big day where maybe he breaks a couple of those for long receptions and gets into the end zone. I don't think he scored a touchdown yet this season.
Nope, he hasn't.
That would be the guy who, outside of sort of, you look at the running backs, Armstrong and then Riley, Morgan would probably be my top choice.
So earlier you mentioned Seathan Carter as the best player on the Nebraska football team, and I think maybe last week I asked you who was the best team in college football. So on a national landscape and halfway through the season here, who is maybe your Heisman favorite or who you think might be like the number one overall pick?
In terms of for the Heisman, I think you still got to go, even though Duke put a little bit of scare in last time. I think you're still on Lamar Jackson. I think Deshaun Watson has probably done enough to still merit consideration for the top pick. I tell you who it's not. It's not Mitch Leidner. He has not helped the draft stock. So that's about as much as I know in terms of draft watching.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hale Varsity Radio, and big fan of Mitch Leidner, obviously. And who isn't? I mean, the guy's amazing. Talking Nebraska and Indiana today. How about defensively? Have you been surprised by the ascension of Chris Jones? Some of the talk about him at the corner spot, that he could be an early entry into the draft, is borderline shocking where you consider where he was pre-Illinois last year.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he always sort of had that ability, but you hadn't really seen it coming into this season. And since then, you've sort of seen a whole bunch of it. He's definitely playing at a level where I think that becomes a realistic topic of conversation for him. I remember him coming out of Florida. A lot of people were pretty high on him. I think Chris Schmidt spoke with his high school coach, who was kind of aghast that Florida State hadn't offered him. So seeing him, with him, it seems like he kind of looked at last year, the transition to a new pass defense. Didn't go the way anyone wanted it to. But with Chris Jones, I think you can kind of see, okay, this is a guy who put in all the work necessary, who did everything he could to say, last year's not happening again for me. And he's done it. I mean, he's playing at an extremely high level.
Brandon Vogel, Hale Varsity Radio. All right, Brandon, so today, is there a Bloomington staple? Like, is there something you have to have while you're there? Is some sort of, you go to Nebraska, you should have a Runza or a Misty steak. What about Bloomington?
Yeah, I haven't identified one of those yet. We were walking around downtown last night, and the Chocolate Moose, which is an ice cream shop, totally old school, like tiny little building, had a packed house. It definitely looks like the sort of place that they're shooting B-roll of when College Game Day, or BTN tailgate in this case, is in town. So maybe post game we'll grab an ice cream sundae.
So I can't remember what it's called, sadly, but Jerry DiNardo has an Italian restaurant in Bloomington. So I guess maybe if you Google that, you can find that.
Oh.
Yeah, we were gonna try and go there last night, but didn't make it. So maybe for lunch.
All right, Brandon, be good today. Thanks, man. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Check out Brandon's work on HaleVarsity.com after the game today. Both he and Aaron Sorensen, Aaron Babcock, all down there. So excellent coverage coming up on HaleVarsity.com and across social media as well. All right. Gary Sharp is next. The Iron Horse will join us on Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now it's time to get back to the Hale Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week.
What?!
Hale Varsity Radio on a Saturday. Mark Kranak alongside TJ Henning. Chris Schmidt is away at a wedding. Chris Schmidt's been to more weddings this year than, like, he's like, I don't know, a wedding planner or something.
Yeah.
I think it's like his third one in the last, like, month and a half.
Glad to know he has friends, though, so that's good.
Well, yeah, it is good. Nebraska at Indiana today. Indiana also has a Memorial Stadium. That's what they call it. Capacity 52,929, and it's a weird stadium. On one end zone, it's completely open. On the other one, they got those graphics. What the hell is that? Have you seen that? You know what I'm talking about, TJ? Like, behind one of the end zones, they have, like, photographs and all this other weird crap along the wall. Have you seen that?
No, I have not seen that.
You know what I'm saying? It is peculiar, to say the least.
I guess I'll get a good look today during the game.
Yeah, you're going to see it. It's like they have graphics under, like, right behind their goalposts. It's just sort of like, why would you have graphics when you're, like, actually at, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Let's welcome in Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse. Gary, in terms of football stadiums, that's a weird stadium, right? Like, it's not a bad stadium, but it's weird. Like, is there a weirder one in the Big Ten?
Well, they built it to resemble Assembly Hall. You know how in Assembly Hall it's steep on the sides and then there's not much behind the baskets? That's kind of how they built their football stadium. The place where you're talking about, that's where Indiana comes out of. Like, their football offices and weight room and their game day locker room is behind that. So they have graphics of, like, their players that go from, you know, basically one side of the end zone to the other, and then the middle is a door where they come out of.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But they have, like, graphics of fans and or players. They, like, change them out.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very... Just, like, it's a very peculiar stadium. It just, you know, it's one of those things where it was small to begin with, and then they just kind of tried to add on to it. But yeah, one side is really, really steep. It's a unique place. You know, I mean, I think their fingers are crossed that they'll have a huge walk up today to sell it out. But you know, if they get 40,000 in there on a Saturday, I think they're pretty happy. You know, and that leaves you 17,000 empty seats.
Gary, this was the game before the year that I had circled as, like, the not obvious worry game. Of course, Wisconsin and at Ohio State, those are, you know, probable losses for Nebraska, I think.
Mm.
But this was the one that where you're just kind of like, ugh, don't like the looks of this. As the season has shaken out, Nebraska 5-0, Indiana being what they are, what do you think? Is Nebraska rightfully concerned about this one, or do you think Nebraska wins this one without leaving much doubt?
Well, I think Indiana has Nebraska's attention because of ranked teams that have played in Bloomington that have either lost, i.e. Michigan State a couple weeks ago, or struggled last year. They took Michigan, Ohio State, and Iowa all the way to the end of the game. So I think that has Nebraska's attention. But I think Nebraska, this is a good spot, Nebraska off a bye week. If this was a week where you were coming off a game, you got ranked in the top 10, you had to talk about it, and then you had to go on the road, I would be more concerned. I think in the middle of the summer, I was like you, Mark. I pegged it as a game to kind of watch because Nebraska's never been there before. They haven't played Indiana, so it's a unique, you know, it's very unique matchup. But as you watch the season unfold, and Nebraska has started to eliminate some of their losing habits of last year, I also think that Indiana not being as good offensively but a little bit better defensively, I think quells any concern I have about Nebraska going in there and stumbling. I think it'll be a tight game. I think Nebraska, you know, they know what the mission is, and if they don't do it to themselves, I think today they play smart football. They don't turn it over. Defensively, that's where I think they'll have to win the game. I think they win this game, but it'll be a good four-quarter game, and that's good for the Big Ten, that Indiana is going to battle and be in that middle tier where you don't have as many walkover teams in the Big Ten. But it'll be a good test for Nebraska today because it'll make them do some things that they haven't done on a regular basis this year.
So which is more worrisome for you than going into today's game, Gary? Nebraska's offense with all of their injuries or the Nebraska defense going against the Indiana offense?
Well, I think the defense. I think offensively, Jordan Westerkamp out, of course, any time that Jordan Westerkamp's not playing is not good. But watch Brandon Riley in the slot. He's a guy that's got the speed to play that position, and he's also bigger than most guys that play in that slot. I think Brandon Riley will have a big day today. With Cethan Carter, you saw during the Illinois game that Nebraska was able to overcome some of the things that Cethan Carter gives to you
by the combo of Cotton and Foster, and they did a really good job. Sam Cotton is on a nice stretch of football here. And so I think you won't see him, you know, all over the place. But remember, Seathan Carter, are we missing the Seathan Carter that we want him to be, or are we going to miss the Seathan Carter that we've seen so far this year, where he doesn't have a lot of targets and a lot of downfield targets? So I think Nebraska offensively with their injuries will be fine. Tommy Armstrong is good to go, by the way. On the defensive side of the ball, because of the RPO and what a 6'6", 237 quarterback can do to you, first of all, you got to bring him down when you hit him because he's going to fall forward. And also, they're going to challenge you mentally where you've got to be on your keys and you've got to be able to trust your eyes if you're defensive back. So some of the things that have plagued Nebraska, with, especially the linebacker, with miscommunication and things like that, Nebraska's going to have to shore up in this game, and we'll see if it comes through that they've worked on extra tackling in the bye week, that that's going to be okay. Also, they're going to have to win some matches up front. There's going to be, when they protect the seven, there's going to be a lot of one-on-ones. You know what the problem's been for the linebackers is that defensive line in Nebraska doesn't have the two NFL guys, so it's affected you a little bit. Those guys got to be good today to win some battles so the linebackers can roam free.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Let's talk Terrell Newby, as we often do. This sets up maybe as for maybe the first time in his career where Newby will be asked to be the bell cow today. He's gotten, he essentially gets about 10 carries a game this year. Last year, he had maybe a couple where he approached 20. But for the most part, this is a 10 carry a guy running back, or 10 carry a game running back. Do you think that Nebraska is going to be able to count on Ezigbo today? And if not, do you think it is going to be the Terrell Newby show today, maybe for one of the first times in his career?
Well, I think, and Mark, you and I have talked a lot about him, and he's become one of those guys. He's not a mirror, so he's going to get talked about, scrutinized. He's probably not the running back that we saw coming out of Southern California when he was recruited. But if you look at it and you go by the Illinois game, he's a guy that is a nice, I'm going to get you at least 5.5 yards every carry. He's not going to be a guy that's going to break off that 63-yard run. He's just going to be a guy that you keep pounding and pounding and pounding. And in a road game today where you got to kind of, you get into it and you get a feel for how the game's going to go, Newby might be the best guy that you have running the football. Because if he's going to get you 5.5 every carry, why not keep feeding him? You know, only twice in his career he's carried over 20 times. That was South Alabama last year, and then his last time out against Illinois. I see no reason today not to give him the ball at least 20 times. Now, Ozigbo, nice that he's an option, but how much of an option? And I also think on the back end, maybe a little bit of Wilbon. And then Trey Bryant. I know Trey Bryant has started to regain the trust after laying the ball on the carpet, but I'm almost to the point of the season where I want Trey Bryant to continue to give us good kickoff returns, which he has done. But I think a steady dose of 34 in the backfield today would be okay for Nebraska.
So in your previous answer to me, Gary, you kind of slipped in that Tommy is good to go today, yet the talk last week was if Nebraska had a game, he wouldn't be able to go most likely. So then are the coaches not going to be cautious with him today and he'll still see double-digit carries?
Well, I think they challenged him this week just to see if they can run him. I don't think you'll see, well, you won't see the JT Barrett number of carries that he had against Indiana last week. But they would have not put in the full game plan if Tommy was not good to go. So they tested him. He had a good end of last week where the foot felt a lot better, and he was able to walk through on Sunday and then ramp it up as the week's gone along. So he's good to go. But, TJ, just like you and I and everybody else, you want to see him tested early. You would like to see him maybe on a designed run where he has to test that ankle. Maybe he has to make a cut. Also, you want to see a guy like Alonzo Moore, who that shoulder's just going to be a thing that's going to carry with him all year. Maybe Alonzo Moore, who right now is your biggest deep ball threat, maybe you get him involved. And so that quells any concerns you have about injuries. But Tommy's feeling good. If Tommy was not feeling good, he would not be tweeting some of the stuff that he's been tweeting this week. That kind of gives you an insight to how good he feels and that nobody should worry. He's good to go for today.
Gary Sharp with us, Hale Varsity Radio. How about DeMornay Pearsonell? Is he going to be Jamal Turner and sort of leave Nebraska with all this promise, flashes of brilliance, but just towards the tail end of the career, it just didn't happen? Or is he just kind of waiting to explode and Nebraska will actually start to get some offensive production out of him?
Well, you've seen it. I think his confidence has returned in the return game. I don't know in that area how much he'll get today because their punting is not the most they're kind of all over the map in terms of punting. He'll get a couple opportunities. But on the offensive side, you're absolutely right. I think they've kind of tried to get him more involved in the offense. But again, that's a trust thing. This staff, they have to trust you that you're going to hold on to the football, you're going to run the right route, you're going to be there when they need you. I think today would be a day that you would say, okay, number 15's got a shot. But I think it's a guy like Stanley Morgan that probably gets more of the action than maybe a DeMorne Personnel from before injury would get. But he's the one to watch. He's feeling a lot better. I think he just needs that spark on offense. You know, he got the spark on the return game against Oregon. Now he needs that spark on offense with a big play. But they also, I think they would like to use him on the jet sweep, but right now he doesn't look real comfortable running the jet sweep.
So about midweek, you had Coach Banker saying Indiana was stealing signals and kind of downplaying a little bit. Does that just fall under the if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying talk?
Well, you know what? Hey, don't we all like take something from everybody? I mean, we're always looking for a competitive advantage. It happens in football. It's probably a little bit more difficult to do it than like in baseball, but people do it in football. I mean, you got guys up in the booth at Memorial Stadium in Lincoln that are looking right at the Nebraska sideline, and they're focusing on the guys that are signaling in place and trying to pick something up. I think Banker brought that up, and I that will not be a storyline in this game unless Nebraska struggles, and then you're like, oh, they were whining. I think he just brought it up. He was answering an honest question, and somebody, you know, probably in that has played Indiana said, hey, you guys might want to be aware of this. You might want to go with a dummy signal or do a second indicator. I don't think it's a big deal, but it shouldn't surprise anyone. Everybody's looking for that competitive advantage. It happens in every level of football. You're trying to steal signals from the other sideline. But I can't imagine that you are able to work that quickly with how quick the tempo is that you're able to figure out what they're doing and get your defense set as well.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. All right, Gary, with Nebraska at number 10, they climbed a couple spots during the bye week. It looks like if, you know, Ohio State handles their business, if Alabama crushes Tennessee, it's reasonable to think that Nebraska with a good showing could get up to number 8. Do you think that happens today? Like, all things told, looking at Alabama, Tennessee, looking at Ohio State, Wisconsin, a lot of teams have a bye week this week. Nebraska with Indiana, what do you think unfolds? Where does Nebraska end up?
Well, I'm not a polls guy. I'm not real big into the polls. I start to pay attention when the real poll comes out on November 1st, the college football playoff poll. And I think the reason that Nebraska is 9th or 10th is because they have been able to weave their way through their first 5 games, and they have 0 losses. So as they have entered the poll, other teams have lost, and Nebraska has moved up just because they're unbeaten, not because of their play. But keep this in mind. We all knew going into this year that the back end of the schedule is loaded for Nebraska, and that's where you find out more about them. So I'm not all caught up as Nebraska, the 9th or 10th best team. I think if I was doing the playoff poll today, and I know you had Brad Edwards on earlier, I would probably have Nebraska 13, 14, 15 in the country. But the beauty of the sport is we will finally find out, actually today a little bit, because this is a game where Nebraska is a trendy upset pick, and people have struggled in Bloomington for Nebraska to go in there and win a road game. And then in 2 weeks with the back-to-back to Wisconsin, Ohio State, beauty of the sport, you play the games, and then you find out how good you are when you match teams that have similar, I guess, rankings next to you. So, you know, Nebraska could move up, and it's great for the program to call somebody up and say, hey, we're in the top 10. Or when you're watching the scroll today, you see Nebraska has a single-digit number next to them. But just keep in mind why Nebraska is there, and keep in mind that they're going to get to either validate it or vindicate it here in a couple of weeks.
Gary, you watch a lot of college football, and we're halfway through the season. Who's the best team you've seen so far in college football?
I would, you know, and it's so week to week because 18 to 22-year-old kids are so up and down. I think there's the Fab Five. There is Clemson. There is Alabama. There's Ohio State. There's Michigan. And there's Washington. And it's a good debate to have is who's a good football team, who's a great football team. I think we have some very good football teams, and then I think we have good teams. But if you do the eyeball, those are 5 teams that stand out. But winning is hard, and it's so week to week. Which team shows up from week to week? Because if, let's say, Alabama doesn't cover today, do you go, boy, Alabama's not that good. What if Ohio State and Wisconsin play a late fourth quarter game? Do you go, man, maybe Ohio State isn't that good? It's tough to win in college football, so use your eyeballs. But those are the five that I would put in there. You know, and then anybody that plays Rutgers would be in my top five as well.
Yeah, obviously. And, man, I didn't want to believe that Michigan was that good. But, Gary, I don't know if they're getting enough credit right now, to be honest. I most people are just Ohio State and Alabama. It's those two. And then kind of a close, you know, Michigan's up there, but not quite. Their defensive numbers and then what they did to Rutgers last week was that was criminal. Did that run game not remind you a little bit of Nebraska's heyday?
Well,
going to like Ames or something and dropping 60 on them and then getting out of town.
Well, Mark and you know, TJ is only familiar with this because of YouTube. Not remind you of the 84 Nebraska Minnesota game?
Oh, dude,
the absolute beatdown,
brutal.
With running backs. Michigan might be the best special teams unit in the country. And that defense is really, really good. The thing you'll watch today that if Nebraska is going to make the next step on this progress that they've already attained, it's got to be that speed. You're going to watch Ohio State today. They'll have a ton of speed. Michigan has so much speed. But the Wolverines, we'll see. They get to go to East Lansing in a couple of weeks. And I know Michigan State is wounded right now, but that's a rivalry game. But, yeah, can we just fast forward to the game coming up in late November between Ohio State and Michigan?
Yeah, that'll be good again. Yeah, absolutely. Gary Sharp, Hale Varsity Radio. Gary, thanks for spending a few minutes, and we'll talk to you next week too, bud. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, guys. I did not realize you guys were talking about Schmitty and his wedding.
And
I've known Schmitty for a long time. I'm very disappointed this morning that he has not alerted me that he is Mormon.
Is he?
Is he? Did you say? I caught the tail end. Did you say he's getting married again or he's attending?
Oh no! Yeah, he's attending.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No, you got that wrong.
Okay, so any. I did not. You know, then he's not Mormon.
He's not a polygamist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
South Dakota.
All right. So that cleared some things up. I feel much better about the future of the show then.
Okay. Good. Let's go. All right. We'll pass that along to him.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Gary.
Nothing wrong with a little Schmitty polygamy talk, is there? I mean, there really isn't.
Can't go wrong with that.
We're talking about Michigan. No, nothing. Nothing at all.
Okay, can I be counter argument to Michigan? I still think they're really impressive, but they've only played one road game. Their non-conference is pretty weak, but, I mean, they truly are impressive. I still need a little more from them. Need a little wait and see a little bit.
Dude, it is like hand-to-hand combat when their defense is crazy. Right
oh,
now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So listen to this. Their opponents have attempted to convert a third down 82 times.
This is nuts.
82 third down attempts. They've converted 10. Michigan's third down percentage, third down conversion defense is 12.2%. What normally leads the country by the end of the year, what normally leads the country somewhere around in like the 25 to 28 range.
Yeah.
Usually it's around there.
Man.
These dudes through six games, 12% on third downs. They are crushing people.
That is absolutely nuts. You feel like they're going to have some regression to the mean, but I mean, man.
They're allowing 212 yards a game.
And that's crazy in today's college football with the offenses we have.
But
Hawaii, Wisconsin's offense, Rutgers, Penn State, like UCF.
You're
right. But yeah.
But just the sheer dominance that those guys have had. And it's just like, even against Wisconsin, that pocket lasted for what, about a half second?
Yeah.
There's no pocket. You don't get to establish a pocket against those guys. It's pretty scary how good they are defensively right now. We'll see if they can hold up. I mean, who knows? All right, we've got to hit a break. Coming right back. Hale Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
All right, very important information to pass along as we wind down a Saturday on Hail Varsity Radio. Mark Kranak alongside Chris Schmidt. All right. No, I'm not. Alongside TJ Henning, who's filling in for Chris Schmidt, but he's here in spirit. Chris Schmidt is.
Yep.
Important information to pass along.
Okay.
Nebraska's on the road today. Not wearing alternate uniforms. What do you suppose their pants color is today?
White?
No. Nebraska's going red pants on the road.
Ooh.
Traditionalists, run the ball guy, are all very happy with that.
Yes. Yes, they are.
White pants.
Red
pants. Just look at Nebraska's record. White pants on the road versus red pants on the road. The percentages are heavily in favor of please wear red pants. This is important information.
All right.
But it was just confirmed by Brian Rosenthal, who's now working in the Husker Athletic Department.
Okay. I was going to say maybe it was Vogue. He's usually on top of the pants thing.
Well, and Indiana's wearing the they're wearing some alternate unis today. They have some candy stripe stuff happening on their shoulder pads.
Mm.
And numbers on the helmet. Yeah. How about that?
How about
it? How do you expect that to affect today's outcome, TJ?
I mean, Indiana might just be blinded by those red pants, man.
They could. They could. So I'm happy about that. doesn't look like the weather is going to be too much of a factor today in Bloomington. And by the way, it's a pretty nice day out today, too, after being so cold.
Yeah.
In and around the area. Today's not bad at all.
Well, yeah, it was like,
but it doesn't,
it was like 66 when I woke up this morning compared to like 30 the other day.
Yeah, like it's going to work. No, you look at today, it's, you know, it's 57 right now in Bloomington, high of 78 today. Going to have a wind at about 5 miles an hour. So it's not going to be much of a factor.
Mm-hmm.
No chance of precipitation, which is good because you get concerned that if Nebraska, no, I'm being serious here. You get concerned that if Nebraska, for some reason, really struggles to run the ball, and that could happen based off of how Indiana's played defense,
mm-hmm.
how Seathan Carter is no longer part of that run block, how Divine Azigbo might not be good to go. You could see a scenario where the run game could struggle today. And if it did, then Nebraska has to take to the air. At least they won't have to deal with, you know, swirling 25-mile-an-hour winds and rain and all that. So
mm-hmm.
conditions are optimal today.
Yeah, and it was interesting to hear Gary say Tommy's good to go for the most part, and I'm interested to see how many times he'll be running the ball today. I mean, you got to keep that Indiana defense honest, so we'll see how cautious the coaches are with him.
Something tells me, look, that Carter loss is, I don't know. You heard Brandon talk about it. He thinks Carter's Nebraska's best player.
Yeah.
It's tough to argue with, to be honest.
No, yeah.
You watch. And I thought he said it perfectly. He's a violent blocker. I mean, he really is. He's an intimidator. He is laying people out in the run game. And that gets old.
Mm.
That gets really old. Look, Nebraska's formula has been exactly what you want out of hashtag run the ball offense.
Yeah.
It's been breaking open in the fourth quarter every game. I mean, and by this point, you have 5 games in the books. It's a trend. Right, like that's what Nebraska is, but you take him out of the mix, and you take Azigbo out of the mix, and it's sort of like formula is going to get tested today. I think Nebraska is going to end up going to the air a little bit more than we've seen.
So, what is your game prediction for today? What is your score prediction?
I'm really terrible at these, man. I'm really bad at predictions.
You can't be as bad as Bill Dolman, are you?
Well, I don't know. Is he pretty bad too?
Well, I mean, he's usually saying 581-7, so.
Oh, okay. No,
that's how much he cares about score predictions.
I think Indiana puts up some points today. I really do. I think they're probably putting up 31.
Okay.
Which is kind of scary. But I think Nebraska gets the W. I go with Nebraska 38-31.
Okay.
I think it's going to be that kind of game.
I'm going a little less high scoring. I'm going Nebraska 28, Indiana 24. I think Nebraska gets out to an early lead, but then just hangs on. After an Indiana charge in the second half.
Hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting. It's kind of cool. I mean, this is one cool thing about the Big Ten Like, what's your opinion of Indiana? You have no opinion of Indiana. Right? Like, just, I don't know. I've watched them over the years a little bit. I have never watched an entire game of Indiana football.
Yeah.
Ever. Ever. You get to see a little bit of that today, which is good. All right, TJ, good job, man. Thanks for stepping in today.
You got it.
All right, that's TJ Henning. Chris Schmidt's back next week. I'm Mark Kranak. That's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery on a Saturday. Lottery.